This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. This is Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball National Team Coach, Peter Caliendo.
Welcome to all our listeners in the U.S. and around the world. You're listening to Baseball Outside the Box, and I'm your host, Pete Caliendo. Hey, thanks for joining us today for another great show. As you know, this is the show that interviews baseball's best coaching minds who love the challenge, the status quo. Before we begin, all we ask all to our loyal listeners, do us a favor, go to Stitcher, iTunes, go to reviews, give us a review, whatever that may be. If you love the show, give us a great one. That really helps the show more than anything. That's the only thing we're going to ask of you, because that's how people get to know the show. When there's more reviews, better reviews, more people see it online. So that really helps. So we appreciate it. And if you're new listeners, we hope you enjoy the show and you become a longtime listener by joining the show. You can do that easily by going to the website, baseballoutsidethebox.com. All right. Also, you know, don't forget, Caliendo Sports International is heading to the Dominican Republic December 26th. We're looking for one more player, ages 15 or 14 years old, who'd love to be part of the team competing in the Dominican Republic. Send me an email at petercaliendo@icloud.com. And we also have teams traveling this summer all over the world. If you're interested in that as a coach or player, just send me an email and we will be back in touch and tell you all about the program. International baseball is one of the best experiences anyone can have, not only culturally, but also from a baseball perspective. So we hope you join us this summer from anywhere from Italy, Cuba, Dominican Republic, Japan, and other parts of the world, even Australia. All right. Now, today's topic, we are going to get into hitting. We're not getting into the mechanics of hitting. We're going to get into a lot different areas. We're going to get into some really fun stuff, some controversial out there, you know, like launch angles. We're going to talk about hitting away from the shifts, why guys can't do that, or if, you know, if they do it at other levels, why are they doing it always at the big league level? We're going to get into, you know, counts. What do you, you know, how do you deal with counts, communication, so much more. So before we get started, let me tell you about our special guest. He is the Colorado Rockies hitting coordinator, my good friend Darren Everson. And ironically, Darren, and I have to tell everybody, first of all, Darren and I known each other from independent baseball way back. And then Darren was, you know, gave us the honor of being one of our coaches that ended up in the Dominican Republic in competition about 4 or 5 years ago. And what a thrill it was for our players to have Darren as one of the coaches. Also, just recently, I'm heading back to Cuba. I am back from Cuba. And during my travels back from Cuba, I run into Darren at the Miami airport. He's coming back from the Dominican Republic looking at his players, and that was fun catching up. I know we're busy schedules, but that was great just seeing him and his wife. So let me tell you about Darren now. Right now, Darren is, you know, to me, he's known as, you know, he's spoken all over the country. He's spoken at the largest baseball convention, the ABCA, as you know, over 6,000 coaches. He is the Colorado Rockies hitting coordinator, which means he handles all of the minor league systems. And he will tell you a little bit about what he does, and we'll get into that detail. He also has his own elite baseball academy, travels around the country training players and coaches. So check that out. You can check that out at elitebaseballacademy.com. He's a graduate of, and I bring this up, Mayville State University, because he was under a great coach, Scott Berry, someone who I've known for a long time, a role model, just a great person. Now, Darren's also managed, you know, in the minors. He's a double-A field manager. He was a double-A hitting coach. He was also, he'll tell us, with the MLB Arizona Fall League. So without any, you know, further introduction, because we can keep going on, let me introduce to you my good friend, Darren Everson. What's up, buddy?
Hey, Pete. Great to be on your show, man. I appreciate it.
Well, it's a thrill to have you. I know I've tried a few times, and I know what my schedule and your schedule, and you know, what was interesting is our schedules kind of caught up. It was ironic that at the Miami airport.
Yeah, I think it was meant to be. With of all places we meet in Miami, both from the Midwest and both coming back from third world countries, basically. So was meant to be, and I'm glad that we were able to connect today, and it's going to be a good time.
Yeah, and not only, you know, third world countries, but two of the best baseball countries in the world, where, you know, the majority of the players, obviously, you know, a third of the draft, or not the draft, but the third of players that come out of in the minor league baseball, major league baseball, come from the Dominican Republic. So, I mean, those are, you know, two great places.
Absolutely. And then, you know, as you know better than anyone, as Cuba starts to open up, it'll be interesting to see how that kind of rolls in. We did have one Cuban player down with us who's been with us now for 2 years, who's a good player. And, you know, we actually added a Dominican Republic team this year. We have two. There are, there's actually 44 teams down there now. So
wow.
That means that 14, so basically half of all Major League Baseball organizations now have two teams down there. We're fortunate to have that, fortunate to have a facility that is beautiful, that can accommodate that, and they do it right down there. It was a lot of fun to go down there and kind of get instructional league rolling, and now they're down there playing games.
Well, I hope our players and coaches and parents in the U.S. that are listening to the show just heard what Darren said. You know, it's getting more and more competitive. These kids are hungry, coming from these countries. They're great athletes. They're working hard. Now they're being brought in and worked in by professional people. You know, Darren, you know, let's do this. Let's give our audience a little taste. You know, I know you got, you know, I went a little bit on your background, but let's give them a taste of now what you're in charge of, because you've got a big, big responsibilities with the Colorado Rockies, you know, a playoff team that's done really well, you know, great players. Give our audience, what's your main responsibility with the Rockies?
Yeah, first of all, very fortunate and blessed to have a great position like this. It is kind of an, just a job that you dream about. It's basically, when the hitters come in, basically our philosophy that we're trying to create is led by myself and the other hitting coaches. We try to do it very holistically. We try to, when I got the job last year, this is my first full year of doing the hitting coordinator position. Definitely talk to our hitting coaches, our individual hitting coaches, in detail, even with their written questionnaires, even with multiple phone calls. I wanted to make sure that we were not missing anything, that we were attacking the way we want to hit, the way we want to be in the batter's box, the right way and collectively, so we're all on the same page. And as we move forward, we get our players on the same page, so we're able to make our transitions from level to level as seamless as possible, and make sure we're talking the same language, making sure that we are on the same page in terms of putting it all together and giving our hitters the best opportunity to perform well when game time starts. And that's what it's all about.
No, so now daily, once spring training begins, now what do you do? What is your role, to oversee everything and you go to different clubs?
Yeah, in spring training, I'll get out there in February and be a part of the big league camp. And then also when minor league camp opens this past year, it was right from day one, setting everything up, making sure all the stations are where we need to be, trying to create as much, especially in instructional league, towards the end of this year of doing this, the more that I was running around seeing different teams and players and that type of stuff, the more we talked about trying to challenge our hitters and make sure that we are helping them compete when it comes to the 7 o'clock at night. And some of that means getting out of the realm of all the comfort drills that are out there and with tees and side toss and stuff like that, and getting into more events that it's hard to simulate the game of baseball, but as much as we can simulate the game of baseball, and essentially putting them in different drills, different constraints that actually go out there and create some challenges for our hitters. And you know, there's challenges with that. You guys want some comfort, and they're trying to make a team too, so we balance that. But we introduced a lot of new items this year in terms of how we're trying to measure stuff, and how we're trying to be accountable, and how we're trying to be objective with as much information and data as we can to help the player become the best he can be. And that's our goal. That along with the personal relationships that you have to create to help, you know, kind of foster this environment that we're looking for. Those are the big things that I spend my time on.
You know, I love what you said about the communication with your staff and also the part about the input that you guys talk about the hitting. You know, you talk about what you're going to, you know, lay out as your plan. You don't just come in with a plan and say, this is what we're going to do. You know, I think that, you know, when you put all your heads together, man, you come up with some great things. I also understand from interviewing other people with major league teams that, you know, I'm going to be asking certain questions, but, you know, sometimes you may not be able to give an answer because there are some things that, you know, the clubs like to keep to themselves because that's what separates them and helps them. But one area you talked about, which I thought was very interesting just now, and, you know, we're going to jump a little bit because you brought it up, and we can always go back to some other things. You know, the transfer of the daily, you know, offseason, maybe, you know, T-drills and soft toss stuff, then all of a sudden transferring, doing drills that are game-like. Give our audience, you know, I know we're on a podcast, but give them a little idea of what a couple things you might do to help them prepare for games.
Sure. Yeah, and you're absolutely right. There's definitely some organizational things that we pride ourselves in that are, we think are separators that we may not totally dive into here, but there are some very good things that I think are being done more and more across the board. I know they're being done more at some of the collegiate levels, and I know that there are a bunch of organizations that are kind of getting into. You know, diving into how can we make our reaction time a little bit more game-like? I think that's the biggest part. That's what we dove into a bunch this year. The reaction time of the eyes, how the eyes are actually seeing the baseball, how far away are you when you flip, the distance that you are throwing your short screen from, the challenge that you can create, especially when you're measuring and recording your exit velocities and even your throwing velocity. So you kind of monitor that. So you are working within the realm that, you know, we've been doing short screen and flips for years, right? But now finding out a distance and a reason why we're at a distance to help mimic the reaction time that our body has to feel and sense to have a little bit of urgency to be ready to hit and not allow just, you know, a swing flaw here or there. Or even an intent flaw here or there, you know, not get them as prepared as they possibly could be for a game situation.
You know, you mentioned exit velocity. I think that's a great area to continue because, you know, there's a lot of young coaches. There's also young players sometimes that listen to the show. Explain, why is exit velocity so important? Because, you know, a lot of times, you know, and we're going to get into the launch angle too, but let's address the exit velocity first. Why is that so important for young people to know, for coaches to understand it? How do they use it and you know, help them apply it into other areas?
Right. Well, plain and simple, if you look at numbers, and the game is definitely trending that way, and it's we're fully engaged in those numbers. I spent a lot of time on my computer this year, which was great. The inner nerd in me comes out a little bit, wraps around the eyes. I think the eyes are so important. I don't think that there's ever going to be a time where the eyes leave the game. But the getting into the numbers and seeing what's happening and seeing what's actually happening with either an exit velocity that basically the force creation you can put into a baseball and or, you know, what's happening if you're using other type of technology to actually give the guys any objective data that you can to help them kind of get an aha moment. Exit velocity is huge. I think that I think forever, even back when you were coaching against me and I was playing against you a long, long, long time ago, there was never a time where I was trying to hit the ball softly. We were always trying to hit the ball as hard as we possibly can. Didn't matter where. Or what pitcher we were facing. Maybe you're trying to get a guy over, which was a little more prevalent back then, and just get him out and make an out, which is a frustrating thing to talk about a little bit sometimes. But when you are trying to hit the ball as hard as you can, you have some great intent in that batter's box. And if you can create that intent in your training, then it will transfer hopefully into the batting practice sessions, machine batting practice sessions, and then ultimately in the game sessions. And the numbers prove it out. I mean, if you hit the ball harder, you are going to get more hits. The percentages show that that's not a disputed item. Mm-hmm. There's a it is a stat. It is a result. It is it's basically what people have been trying to do since the game of baseball started. You know, if you think about it, if you hit a ball low and hard somewhere, you know, we want to hit the ball in the air, but if you get the ball low and hard or a low line drive and it's 106 versus 86, that defender has a lot less reaction time to try to get you out. If you hit a ball in the gap and it's 106 versus 86, the 86 has plenty of time to try to get underneath the baseball and catch the ball. The 106, you're going to split the defense and hopefully create, either they have to make a great play to get you out, or now you are running the bases and hopefully slapping your coach at high five at third base. Exit velocity is really, really important in terms of creating more hits. It's proven that way. And I think that it's a major point for all coaches at every level, you know, because it's been done since the game started, basically. Now we can just measure it better. We can measure it. It's a measure now. So people get caught up, and I don't know. I'm not sure why they get caught up in it, because if you think about it, that's what everyone's ever tried to do, is hit the ball as hard as you can. But they, you know, people jump into exit velocity and launch angle, and then they jump into different numbers and verbiage. And I, you know, some guys, I suppose, get carried away with it. But, you know, we've been trying to hit the ball as hard as we can since the game of baseball has been invented. So I'm not exactly sure why there's even a kickback on the exit velocity piece, for sure, because it's been out there and it's proven.
You know what? Well said. And, you know, I remember, you know, looking for players in the pen ball. I mean, what was I looking for? I was looking for bat speed. I was looking for guys that drove the ball and hit it hard. I didn't have the ways to measure it. So you're correct. Now we have ways to measure it. And it's kind of fun, even for young kids, you know, to, you know, it adds that little incentive when you're training, you know, I get to see how fast, you know, I'm hitting the ball off the tee. Am I getting better at it? I mean, I would think those are all positives. So I really like what you said. And then when you dive into the launch angle, you know, let me know, you know, the way I see launch angle is, you know, creating the right angle to get your line drive is what your ultimate goal is. Now, if that ends up being a ball that goes further and for a home run, great. And I understand for, you know, this is where I think people misunderstand things is, you know, I understand young kids, you know, that are 10 years old, they may not be able to hit the ball out of the park. But if you have the correct launch angle, wouldn't you have a line drive?
Absolutely. I think all players, I think that most coaches should be at minimum talking about hitting the ball over the infielder's head. Mm-hmm. You know, not trying to lift and separate. I think that, you know, I think sometimes you see, and you get some funky stuff on Twitter and stuff like that too, but you see some stuff where it's put in a different perspective. And you see some kids maybe trying to force with their hands how they are trying to hit the word lift, but kind of lifting the ball or kind of making the ball, you know, get to a high point really early. In my opinion, and I think in a lot of hitting coaches' opinion, your body is what creates the attack angle, which then creates the result of the hit. The result of the hit is measured by launch angle. Every ball has launch angle. Now we can just measure it. So if you are a guy that hits the ball on the ground, your launch angle is probably going to be a minus 13 on that ball that's hit. It's still a launch angle. It just happens to be a negative number because it's hit on the ground. If mm-hmm. you pop it up, you're probably in a plus 55 or 45. If you're ideally hitting the ball square and hitting it hard, or even not hitting it hard, to be honest with you, because when guys don't hit the ball as hard, sometimes launch angle is even more important. Because now, can you get the ball over the infielder's head to get a hit? Mm. So every ball has a launch angle measurement. We got to understand that it is a post-contact item. But if you're truly trying to create more hits, you're trying to hit the ball as hard as you can. And the numbers show that when you hit the ball in the air, that's where you get the slugging percentage, and that's where the numbers show up. And now you backtrack that. And now how are you moving efficiently in the batter's box? How are you able to create that contact at the right depth of contact? And how are you able to move your body on time with the pitcher in order to create that? when you can do that efficiently, now you've done something right. And there's a lot of different ways to do it. Everyone, I mean, you know, there's like 123, 124 hitters in our organization, and they're, you know, everyone does it a little bit differently. You know, the ideas and concepts are the same with creating force and that type of item, and trying to hit the ball as hard as we can and square the ball up at this or that, and trying to create the result we want. What I love about it is if you get measurements, you have an ability to reorganize your body. The human body is amazing. It's kind of like shooting a basket, right? If you're shooting a basket and you're from 10 feet and you continue to clank, 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 you are going to make an adjustment because there's that pride factor that goes, why can't I make this from 10 feet? What's going on? You reorganize your body or your eyes or how you're moving or how you jump or how much you jump. And your body regulates that and moves into a position that will allow you to be more successful at putting the ball into the basket. It's the same thing with hitting. If you are trying to hit the ball in a certain way and you have that intent and a goal, your body is an amazing thing that, you know, especially if you have the hand-eye coordination and skills and some fluidity to your body, then it becomes really pretty to watch. But your body will reorganize itself to try to get that created intent goal, it'll do it without a whole lot of coaching cues if you allow it as a coach. But the idea is it's similar to shooting a basketball, because especially when you start measuring stuff and you got the hit tracks and different things like that, and a lot of different great technology that's out there. Once the ball is hit and you get feedback on the results, then you can start helping yourself create more intent on what you're trying to do. And yeah, there's some physical cues that can help with that, but the mental ability to try to create some intent with what you're doing, I think, is imperative. And the good ones do it all the time, and it's a fun thing to watch.
You know, Darren, it sounds like, and it's interesting because it sounds like the game's evolving a little bit. It always does. I mean, as we get technology and everything, it sounds like you're saying, you know, less teaching and let them do it more and look at the end result and work backwards from there.
Definitely a big piece of it, for sure. As you know, because you came through this realm before I did as a coach, we always had our ideas, and most of the time we taught what we knew, right? We taught what we were taught. My dad was my high school coach. I love him to death. He's awesome. He's the best dad in the world and an okay baseball coach. He was good. And he taught what he knew. Mm-hmm. And essentially when I got connected with a guy in Madison when I was there, Kenny Medlock, who you know, biomechanic guy, that helped me learn how to understand how to create force. And that's why I've been on. He was one of the guys that kicked me into coaching a little bit, just because he got my mind thinking. And that's when I figured out how to move my body with intent and energy and how to transfer it. And that's where I talk about energy transfer hitting with all my stuff with the hitting side. And it comes from kind of those conversations, because all of a sudden the ball started jumping. All of a sudden I'm hitting home runs, which was always a guy that hit a lot of doubles, but now some of those doubles turn into home runs simply because of the force I was creating and how it was transferring. And as you continue to go with coaches, if the coaches don't adjust, I think coaches adjust all the time, but how fast you can adjust and how much you can get into the idea of this is the best way for this individual player on how to move, then you have a lot of different approaches for a lot of different guys. And I think that's good. I think the mental intent can be the same, but everyone can do things a little bit differently to create success for them. And that to me is the final key for when you look at coaches. If they do that, chances are pretty good that the players really like them, because the intent is there in getting him better individually, and you'll see a lot of success and improvement hopefully along the way.
And you know what, you earlier, a little while back, you mentioned visual. What's something that the Rockies, your system, you know, because, you know, every skill seems to start with your eyes, obviously. What are some of the things you guys do to help your hitters with the visual aspect, the identifying of the pitches and so forth?
Talk about game speed and that type of stuff. I think a great thing that is done with many, many levels, I think, maybe not at the lower levels as much in terms of younger baseball, but when pitchers throw bullpens, I think it's a great thing to go and track bullpens as a hitter. I think the ability to go in and actually watch a pitcher who's trying to intentionally throw strikes and throw maybe breaking balls in the dirt and maybe change up just off the plate and go in there with some intent within your tracking process, I think can be a major, major part of it. I think that it's so hard to replicate the game that you got to find as many areas to be able to do it in, and I think that's a great way to do it, but doing it with intent. I think machines can be very, very effective. I think that throwing and flipping, meaning over the top flipping, pitching, can from a set distance that creates challenge for a hitter, I think can create great awareness and challenges for the hitter as they go through. And I think those are just some items that are very strong that, you know, if done right, when done right, can definitely help the process of becoming a good hitter.
What about your BP sessions? Now, you know, your system is organized and you have, you know, certain BP sessions and spring training prior to games. Has anything changed with the BP sessions, and what's kind of the routine that helps them prepare for the game?
Yeah, a lot more machines, which I was not a machine guy as a player. Now, looking back, I wish I did it a little bit more. I was more a curveball machine guy when I went through. But just the idea of being able to see speed and see to feel the velo that can come out of an arm / machine, it's tough to replicate, obviously, what the game speed is like. So when you're able to use machines, it can create challenges for sure. And it can create, intent challenges. Like if you're trying to do a certain thing on a bat or a round, I think it's great to do both. I think the live arm, especially, when you've got Coach BP from a certain distance, I think it's great. And also machines, you can do anything you want with machines. We've created a couple of unique items that have really challenged our hitters, and it's not easy. And the process of that helps create better awareness in the zone, and I think it's a great thing.
Darren, in the past, I remember, you know, we've had a lot of players, whether it was with Team USA or whether it was with, you know, from our area here in Chicago, that signed a pro contract. And I'm going back, 20, 25 years, would sign a pro contract. I want to get your philosophy on this and what the Rockies' philosophy is. Sometimes, a player would sign and he'd come out of college hitting really well, and then he'd go into a minor league system. And, not all of them, but sometimes, a coach would immediately start to change things because it wasn't the way it fit into the system, whether it be, movement patterns. And we talked about the movement patterns, but what's the philosophy there with the Rockies when you do get your players for the first time? Is there a certain period that you wait to make adjustments, or what's the overall philosophy?
Yeah, we absolutely have a window of opportunity for the player to show what he can do without us really touching him in terms of other than giving him what he wants within his routine, his tees, his flips, his different types of BP, that type of stuff. Different, some guys come in liking heavy bats, end-loaded bats, that type of stuff, hand-loaded bats. I think that they deserve that. I think there's a reason that they were signed by our scouts. Our scouts do a great job of bringing in good talent with our organization, with the Rockies. And, we had it with the Marlins too, about just kind of staying off the first few either weeks and or months to make sure that they're getting a legitimate shot at showing us why they signed, why the scouts like them, and bringing them in and letting them do their thing for a little bit. And usually there's very little major overhaul, I would say, but it's a little tweaks that can help, because we're involved with the pro game all the time and we're swinging with wood all the time. And there's, and just that, sometimes there are some things that we see that can help a younger kid coming in after a month or so of work, whether it's good or bad, failure or success. And it might be a little tweak that might help them get on plane earlier or hit a ball harder or turn their body better or visually see something a little bit better. So, but yes, there's definitely a window. I don't think there should ever be a time where a guy comes in and that we see one swing or one round and go, oh, we got to change this. I love for, I've learned over the years, especially, I'm sure I wasn't always like this, but I really try not to say much during BP. I try to have our pitting coaches say, unless it's positive, just that a boy, that's a good job, that type of verbiage. We don't want to get into the cues during the BP. I want to see what they can do. I want to see if they make adjustments on their own. They may come and have a separate conversation with the coach as they go forward and into the rounds. But I think that sometimes we get players that are waiting to be told what to do. And I think the more that we can open up the opportunity for them to figure out who they are and challenge who they are a little bit, with us just kind of being, nudging them the right way, then there creates ownership, accountability, and, some objectivity to what they're trying to do. And I think that's huge.
I'm glad you brought that up, and because I know you have been working many years with kids all ages, from 5 years old all the way to the major league players. And what I'm hearing, and I want to be clear because, there's a lot of coaches out there at different levels. What I'm hearing is even at any level, let the kid hit a little bit, let him play a little bit, and then try to figure out later, how things are going as a hitter.
Absolutely. Especially, with the trained eye, I really believe that, you could probably see something within the first 10 or 15 swings, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what I like to see and what I would like to see is, does the guy make an adjustment on his own? Or maybe we make an adjustment with how the ball is getting entered into the zone, and maybe does he make an adjustment then? I think that we can easily fall into the trap because at the heart of who we are as coaches, we want to help kids, right? We want to help the player. And sometimes we need to step back and allow stuff to happen, allow them to swing and allow them to move their body the way they're moving their body to see if they can start feeling stuff. Because once they can start feeling stuff, now they can change it. They become their best hitting coach. And that's kind of, if we can guide our guys to really understand and become very knowledgeable on how they move and how they are successful without us saying, yes, you do this well. Yes, you do this well. And unfortunately, I think there's a handful of programs, college, high school for sure, in the high school, because when I was coaching high school, I saw it a lot, where they're just told what to do. They're waiting to be told what to do. And we want players who are ready to make decisions on their own and can feel stuff. If you can feel it, you can change it. And after we measure it, we can evaluate it. And at that point, we're doing our best to prescribe stuff that really works for a hitter that that can help them be productive.
Love it. And coaches out there, trust me, I've been in the game 35 years, and I can tell you many years I wanted to teach right away, and I did it. Unfortunately, I wish I'd have known that, when I first started. And I think, Darren, you said that really well. And that goes into, because you worked with young kids also, at all levels, it goes into the drills. So the drills you mentioned, it sounds like you're tailoring certain drills or exercises according to different hitters and what they need.
Absolutely. They're what they need is the most important thing. Now, you may tinker around and try this drill and try that drill. I think that now that we can measure different things on all levels, on all different levels, whether it's exit velocity or how the swing is, how the body and swing moves within space. If you have the ability to measure something or measure how it's actually producing force and transferring it, then I think you should. And because sometimes the drill that they're doing might not be the best drill for them. It might not be creating what you think it should be creating. Mm-hmm. It might not be, maybe it's something that just because it was different, it helped them. And as they continue to go, maybe they're making a subtle adjustment that is not great for their swing or great for how they move. And that's kind of where we are at as coaches. We monitor it, and when we see something different, and the question of why and how are you doing it and what are you thinking, I think those are all huge, huge items. When players start understanding why they're doing something, and if they can feel how they're doing something, then strides can really be made in the right direction. And it's fun to watch as they start to create their own identity and objectivity to who they are, and understanding what they can become, and maybe finding out that what they were doing was limiting them a little bit, which I think is a great thing. We ran into that a little bit this year, and it's just really cool. It's just fun to watch them grow and progress and become the player that we all as coaches envision in our eyes they can be.
You know, and I believe also that's great, because I think that transfers onto the field when they play too. They become their own player, and, you know, they learn how to play the game on their own a little bit. Now, we all know and understand that hitting is a complicated, you know, accomplishment when it comes to games. What's the philosophy of the Rockies, your philosophy as a hitting coordinator? What do you guys tell your hitters? Because, you know, there's a lot of parents and coaches and players out there that when they go to home plate, they just go to home plate to hit. But there's a lot of people trying to tell them what to do at times. It could be a parent. It could be a coach. What do you tell the player? What should he be thinking about when they get up to that plate and they're ready to hit?
Yeah, well, hopefully the homework has been done a little bit, and homework can be done at every level, even at the youth baseball level. Homework just comes down to, are you actually paying attention to what the pitcher's doing? Like even the slot that they throw from, do they change their slot? Do they have when they throw that bad curveball, do they come out of their slot and show us something differently? And if they can I recognize that early enough to recognize the pitch? And if it's up, I can go attack it. As you go up levels, and it's, you know, double A, high A now, even, cause we get a lot of information from the lower levels as these guys start performing and going up, you know, there's video, there is different information on what the pitcher is good at, what he does in this count, what he does in that count. We, all the way through up until AAA, we keep a manual chart, that helps us with that stuff that we keep in the dugout. You know, little things like that, not to go into too much detail, but that is, those are the things that we do at the higher level. But really the homework can be done in the on deck circle, getting their timing. I think that's a huge thing. That's universal. Mm-hmm. So many guys will sit and stand, and girls for that matter with softball, sit and stand and not totally get prepared. But, you know, you see the cool videos every once in a while out there on Twitter or Instagram or wherever, where you see kind of the on-deck hitter moving the same way the guy in the box is moving. He's doing his homework. He's getting ready to be on time for their best pitch. And when that happens, it just helps create a bigger window of success, because we're going to fail. We're going to fail a lot. And the more that we can prepare and work to get our body to move on time so our barrel can be on time, I think that's a huge piece for guys to be successful, girls to be successful, and so much of that can be done in the on-deck circle from previous at-bats that you had against this specific pitcher in the dugout, maybe in a little short verbiage from the coach. And you go to the big leagues, AAA, AA, you get a lot of video. Video can be in the dugouts, all that stuff. It's all different. It's all similar. It's just higher end stuff, if that makes sense. Because it's, you know, you have all kinds of numbers and detail. You can get any number you want to. Once you get in that batter's box, now you got to trust who you are. You got to trust your I say it all the time. You got to trust your preparation. And preparation isn't just the 100 balls you hit off the tee. It is making sure you know where this ball is coming in from. What can I do with it? Where should I, you know, does it have to start in a certain spot to be a strike? That type of stuff is huge. The physical cues that I hear watching my son or my daughter play or whatever, that you hear from parents and coaches and all that stuff, plain and simple, I think that if you think that you're making a huge adjustment right then and there, maybe when they're really young, it's helping them. But if you're making an adjustment, and you're telling them three or four different things: elbow up, square your feet up, get in the leg, swing up, or whatever your cue is from a parent that may or may not know anything about the game. It's just all it's doing is juggling the mind up. It's making it confusing. Mm-hmm. And when the mind gets confused, now your reaction time to how you're seeing the pitch and how your body moves is slowed down. And you have that visual that has to have some clearness in the brain and the ability to breathe and allow yourself to just flow with your instincts. Because especially when you start seeing 90 to 100 miles an hour, you are not making a decision. You are making an instinctual move to a ball that you are reacting to with the stimuli there. So as you go through and you clutter that brain up, chances are you're going to have a little bit slower reaction time and probably creates more parents and coaches yelling at them and saying this and that. But the more that they can be quiet, and the more that they can allow their player, their athlete to go compete and have fun, the more success the player is going to have down the road.
And parents and coaches, we know you're well-intended, but hopefully that this really cleared up for you. Well-intended, but remember, try to let your hitters do their thing when they're up there, and you just enjoy the game, relax, and observe. Now, hey, Darren, what about your AA, AAA guys? I know maybe even A-ball guys. Is it certain guys like to, think count? Or do all hitters think count? Do they say, okay, 2-1, this might be a fastball coming, which can be done at the younger ages also. What's your take on that? Is that an individual thing, or is that pretty much something hitters should be thinking about?
I think it's an individual thing. I think that's one of our jobs as coaches is to find tendencies that actually are alarming that pop off the chart on you. If there aren't any tendencies that pop out, then, go play, go attack and try to hit the ball as hard as you can in center field, But if there are tendencies, whether it's in count or pitch type or pitch location, that type of stuff, I think can be a value to the hitter. And as they go through the process, they're going to find out what works best for them. They really are. And some guys can take all kinds of information and filter it. And other guys, one of the things that I've been more aware of, especially in the last 5 years, is just the information and how it's filtered by our players. Everyone comes from a different background. Everyone comes from different verbiage. Everyone comes from different stuff that a drill that is said one way or maybe even called something that is totally different that was used when he was a younger kid as a player. And the filters as to how they absorb and take the information, I think, is huge. Because there's some guys you can go get after a little bit, and some guys you have to just be very politically correct and tell them that I really think this would be a great drill for you. Let them make a decision on it. And that's okay. That's why how they learn, I think, is huge. So that, the more you can do that as an individual, not just in baseball, but as a teacher, I was a teacher for 7 years. The more that you can incorporate that type of filter awareness, I think, as a coach, I think it's huge.
Now, it sounded like also, because you've worked with different ages, a lot of the things that you're talking about, you apply to all the ages. Are there some things, because you've worked with young players, young hitters, are there things you do differently with young hitters that you might do that you don't do with the older ones, or vice versa?
Yes, I think that just movement patterns in general as a younger player is something that's kind of like running form. Mm-hmm. If you've never been taught how to run, then you're running how your body allows yourself to run. If that makes sense.
Yes.
And what you have and what your gait is and what your ability to move your arms and move your flexibility or inability to be flexible with your hips, how that works. Finding out the movement patterns that can help hitters be successful, allowing the player to feel it. You can do it in so many different ways now. That's what I love about where we're at with technology and different movement awareness items, that you can find a lot of different ways to try to to help a player, no matter what the age, attack the goal of how to move properly for them. And I think that when they're younger, it's huge. When they're older, it's still important. It's more of a refinement and a remembering and a reminder of, hey, you know, this is what we need to work on. If we make this move and we have this angle of our upper body, how are you getting that pitch? Are you going there directly to it? Do you need more side bend to get there? Do you need more ability to create a good plane with your barrel to hit this specific ball and to hit it in the air? So I think that those things can be taught more specifically as you go up, but the general overall big movement patterns that help create some rhythm and timing within the batter's box are huge and important. I do a lot more of that now in my camps, in my academy work, mm-hmm. than anything else. We might have a similar station that we've been using for years, a step back drill or we don't have 94 drills. We have about 6 to 5, 7 drills that I think are the core drills mm-hmm. that help movement patterns. And then within that, I think there's like out of those 7, my son is basically, or I think there's 2 that he really needs to have for him. And then there's other auxiliary moves that we use, whether it be with cords or PVC pipe or all that stuff. I think it's all those things can help create the movement pattern that we're trying to get them to feel, and then hopefully be able to transfer that into the different levels of a moving ball coming at them.
Dale, we're coming down to about the last 10 minutes. I want to kind of bring this into a couple things. 1, into the dugout. 2, with slumps. And 3, at the end, we're going to discuss the shifts. The part about the dugout, I want you to bring us inside the dugout during the game, and with hitters, what goes on with specific hitters, and maybe some coaching cues, if there are any, or if not cues, if there's some coaching going on during games when it comes to batting, when hitters come to, you know, maybe the hitting coach and ask a question. Does any of that happen, or is the game just happen and then afterwards, you know, everything's evaluated?
No, I think there's a lot of stuff that goes on in the dugout. Our best teams, the best teams that I've ever had, whether it's this year watching our players as a coordinator role, or the teams that I've had in the past, they communicate like crazy. They come back and they're talking to the other people, especially if they're a light hitter, if they're right-handed and they're both around 6'3" and they're a big dude, or they're left-handed that's 5'10" and there's 2 guys in the lineup like that. Those, you know, we promote that. We want them to talk. We want them to create as much open communication, so there's as much knowledge thrown around that of what we've seen. And so then we're not done though. Then the player, like we talked about those filters, player has information. He can filter it how he wants. Will he use it when he goes into the box? It's up to him. Will he, we've had conversations where maybe the players don't bring it up there and they should, because we think they can handle it. You know, that type of stuff does happen. Mm-hmm. But the best teams always communicate. Uh-huh. They communicate really well, along with the coaching staff too. And most of the time it's the hitting coach, but it doesn't always have to be. It can be the manager, especially when we get into information on opposing pitchers, what the guy looks like, what has he done. He tends to be this guy, tends to be that guy. And then we can get way more specific stuff as we continue to go up the ladder. So there's definitely more reminders. But the biggest thing for me is keeping it positive, man. There's so much failure in our game. If you're taking the other side of it, it's a hard game, man. And the higher you go, it just gets harder and harder and faster and faster. And if you're not moving fast with the intent to hit the ball hard, you're going to really, I think there's going to come a time where you're really going to struggle. And now, can you fight through that and make an adjustment? Or has the game now told you that's where your level is at? And that's what happens. The game will let you know. Our eyes will let us know, because the game lets us know where we're at. And when it comes to that, that's a real thing, because truth be told, people max out their efforts and max out their ability sometimes. Sometimes people just don't get an opportunity to, but, you know, if you can play a little bit, you can move fast, you got a chance to be seen, and people are going to pay attention to you.
You know, even at any level of baseball where you have your better hitters, even they run through a period, you know, throughout the season where they struggle. You know, we call them slumps. You know, I don't think it's never not happened to somebody. What's something, some advice you can give to our coaches, especially, and even parents? You know, and you mentioned the word positive. I'm glad you brought that up because I think we're not positive enough. And in such a mental game, what do you do, you know, when a young player, I mean, even at an A ball, rookie ball level, you know, they're struggling, they're 0 for 24 and they just can't get it. What's the process there? How do you deal with that? I know it could be individually.
Absolutely, it's individually. And we have great mental skills coaches within our organization that help provide a bunch of, you know, just the ability to have someone to lean on and talk to. And I think every coach needs to be a psychologist slash peak performance coach as well, because you're in there in the trenches with them, and you see the how a slump starts to maybe affect their mind. And most of the time, the slumps get built up and blown up because it starts affecting the mind more than it does the swing. You know, you might go through a whole series with someone found a weakness that they think is a weakness, and they keep pounding you, and you had a bad, you know, 4 days. You could easily be 0 for 17, 16. Those things happen. They're real. And now how do you come out of that? How do you manage that mentally? And so much of it's got to be positivity. Hopefully you're surrounding yourself with positive people, your coach, all that stuff. Hopefully people aren't panicking and saying, man, we need to change this and that and this. I always try to, you know, try to number one, stay as positive as possible, and then try to find one thing that they are feeling that isn't, maybe quite what's actually happening. And you can either drill with different things in terms of putting constraints on your drill, or putting a weighted pad in the hands of the hitter, or even just an extra, you know, come in early and take BP and take your routine on the field and just see where it's at, to see some ball flight, to see how the actual ball is traveling off your bat and what's helping to create that. Just to have some talking through sessions, I think, can be huge. And that usually creates some positivity, definitely creates open communication, as long as the player is willing to share and be open. And I think that those processes can be really, really impressive and good for a player. And then the tough part is, he might look really good and went 0 for 4, but lined out 3 times. How is he going to handle it that night? Because he knows deep inside, he knows he's moving the ball, moving his body better. And the results were actually pretty good. But the final results of getting a hit, you know, not getting a hit, or not driving someone in, or lining out to a second baseman with a man on third, less than 2. And you did a great job of hitting a ball as hard as you possibly can. It just happened to go to him. We can't control that. How you actually come out of that on the mental side, the other side of it, is going to help determine the length of the slump and determine the length of kind of the mental imagery and mood that the player's in.
You know, it's something I got to remind myself all the time. When players are doing well, don't forget to remind them. You know, that's so well said. You know, you have an advantage, obviously, at the AAA, AA, and then the major league level, because you've got mental coaches, you've got strength and, you know, flexibility or strength and conditioning coaches. You know, for a lot of young players, whether it be high school, whether it be younger, you know, they go through a season. Now, they practice all winter because they've got the indoor facilities, and, you know, they go through it. All of a sudden, they start the season. Not many of them, you know, do any strength work or any conditioning or flexibility. Can this affect also your hitting?
The training and the not training, or training?
If during the season you're getting weaker and weaker and you're not making an adjustment somehow, because does that affect, can that affect your hitting?
Absolutely. The best hitters are all strong, you know, at all levels. If you think about it, the advanced 12-year-old kid, and he's a superstar. Well, why is he strong? He's more developed than the other kids. He stands out. He sticks out. 14 years old, saying the same thing. When they get to be 16, 17, 18, they tend to catch up to each other, and they kind of get closer to who they're kind of being. But you know, the weight room and using the weight room the right way, I think, is huge. Using different power lifts to help create force, I think, is huge. Getting into the legs, getting into the squats, that ability to just create overall body strength, core strength, leg strength, and starting small. You know, my son started lifting when he was about 13, 12 years old because he was around it a lot, but it was more body weight stuff. He was in the weight room, but it was more body weight stuff. It wasn't some crazy stuff going on. And then later on, after, growth spurts and stuff like that, you take it easy and then you jump back into it. And I think those things can be huge for a player. Creates confidence, creates a different looking body, creates how just the force that you can actually create and actually put through the baseball. And I think that that can create a lot of great things for the player. And I think all coaches, if you can incorporate push-ups and sit-ups and different side stretches and different hip stretches within your realm of practice, I think it's going to be a huge piece for them. I think push-ups and sit-ups at a younger age are instrumental in creating strength as you get older.
And you'd recommend that. And obviously, the audience, you haven't met Darren Everson, but if you met Darren, you know he spent time in the weight room, and he's definitely an intimidating person when it comes to size, which as a power hitter, you know, obviously that helped him a lot. The strength, when we're talking about the strength, you're talking about, you know, it's important continuing this during the season as well.
Yeah, absolutely. That's maintaining it. When I was a high school coach, we lifted at least once a week. We had lighter gain weeks. We would do it twice a week, and we'd go in and power lift. We'd squat, we'd clean, we'd bench, and we'd go in and do it, and we'd always try to keep it so we had a couple of days to recover. But maintaining that allows you to keep your strength as you go forward and go through. That, along with sleep, that along with eating properly, is so, so important. And there's more and more studies now on sleep. I think it's huge. Just to be able to, the whole idea is we don't want to drill the drill. We want, for our level, we want to do everything we can to help the player be ready at 7 p.m. Sometimes that means he doesn't take BP because he needs to rest his body. Sometimes he takes extra BP because he needs to feel something. Sometimes we just hit in the cage. Sometimes when I was in high school as a coach, we used wiffle balls for BP. We took BP before every game. So we had movement patterns working all the time, and we did it with wiffle balls. On the road, at home, didn't matter. So it was just throw me out, we'd use wiffle balls, and we'd go from there. So the more that you can continue to work with the strength and the weight room, even if it's push-ups, sit-ups, and the core stuff, can really carry you through a long season.
All right, we're going to end it with a bang because we're going to bring up another controversial topic within the game of baseball, which is a lot of fun always to talk about. And then at the end, Darren, after this question, what we can do at the end is, you know, our audience realizes this is 50 minutes to an hour show. We're going to try to cover as many areas as we can. You know, each one of these could be a show. Each topic could be a show, or each question could almost be a show. But, you know, at the end, anything that maybe, you know, I didn't ask that I should have asked that you think was important for coaches and players to understand, something that was not brought up, it's open to you. You know, we're going to finish that with that. But before we do that, I want to bring up something that comes up all the time on MLB Network and all over the country. As a matter of fact, all over the world. And when we say the world, I was recently in Cuba. And you're not going to believe it. During our instructional camp for coaches on the field at Latino Americano, where that's where the Rays played, we were doing a 2 to 3 day coaching program. One of the biggest questions that came up, and we already addressed it, which is a place that doesn't get a lot of technology, as you know, because there's not a lot of, you know, they only have internet for so many, you know, minutes and certain places, was launch angle. They're having problems with their young kids with launch angle. So we addressed that part. But the second one that came up was the shifts. You know, why the big question, why can't a major league hitter or a triple A guy, you know, they put the shift on, why can't he hit the other way? So I want to really delve into this and address this issue so we can clarify it for all our listeners.
Sure. I just think there's a lot of layers to this, answered or question and answered. I think that the more well-rounded hitter, meaning that maybe he started. I've plenty of guys that I would rather, if I was to build a younger kid, I would want them to be great to the opposite field gap, hard and in the air if possible. Mm-hmm. When you can even do that, unless you really roll over a bunch of ground balls, the tendency to shift you is going to be minimal, because they'll know they do it because that's what the percentages say, right? Mm-hmm. So the percentages say the ball's going to get hit to this side or that side, and they're going to play defensively the percentages, and that's a major change in the game. The other piece that is attached to that now is if you shift, you need to probably pitch to that shift. And so as we're talking about why can't players go the other way or go the away from the shift, is many times a pitcher is doing a really good job of executing his pitches he may hit it hard, but he hits it hard into the shift. It's part of the game. I mean, if he's a left-handed hitter and the pitcher is throwing hard fastballs away that gives him an opportunity to, put the barrel on that ball and drive it to left field. Well, the pitcher's, it's a team thing. The pitcher may not be doing holding up his end of the bargain to help the team get out into the shift, if that makes sense to you. So that's something that's probably not talked about enough, is the execution of pitches while the shift is on. I think that's a piece of it. Now, as you go through that, there's a reason that people shift. Generally, the guy's got a strength, and that's what his strength is. Let's say a left-handed hitter that really hits the ball hard to the full side, right? Unless he has history with a pitcher or information on the pitcher that knows that we're going to get some balls away here, I can look for something up and out and away. I get an opportunity. I can hit that ball. The intent to hit that ball that way, I think they can hit that ball. It's a matter of, is that actually going to happen with the tendency of the pitcher? Will he actually show that pitch? And for me, I would rather have a guy, stay within his strength and try to hit the ball in the air and in a gap and then, to center field for me, and then work off center field, then really manipulate the barrel and try to get it over. Now, if it's something that's natural, and you see it with these guys, the guys that are up in the big leagues that can really do it. There's a good handful of guys that can really hit the ball all over the place. Mm-hmm. The key with those guys is you don't see the shift. So they're shifting on guys that they have the history of, even on this pitch or that pitch or whatever pitch it is, when he misses, which we miss a lot as hitters, correct? Mm-hmm. When he misses, he's going to miss into a rolled over ground ball or a pop up here. Or, you see a shift that also has the offside outfielder that's weighing in because it's a sinker ball guy on top of it. And then if he does hit the ball in the air to left field, it's probably going to be a flare, not a driven ball. It's kind of, the shifting is kind of a team thing. Offensively, yes, I would love for all hitters to be able to take balls to all different fields from different parts of the plate. And I think that is getting more and more common with guys, with how they're working the plate, how they're working their plate discipline and knowledge. But I do believe that if a team truly is committed to it, it is not just the defensive shifting and everyone else is just kind of playing the game. It is everyone's involved. The catcher's calling the right, or the coach and giving it to the coach, the catcher, and the pitcher's doing his best to execute pitches. And that, I think more and more people are playing the shift with the guy protecting the bunt until you get the two strikes, which also takes away two strikes of swing that you would have maybe, you can't bunt now because the guy's taking it away. So that's out of the picture. And you're not going to bunt with two strikes unless you're Brett Butler. And so, one of the things that happens out there is it kind of is what it is, but I would love to see as many people as possible dominate the middle of the field and let the ball location and pitch kind of take care of the rest. And if you do that, I think you will not be shifted on as much. And so I wish it was a black and white answer for you, Pete. It's more of a gray scale, with lots of different layers on why it's happening. And if they are throwing away and they're shifting, well, then you know what? then, yeah, you should be driving the ball to left field. And if you can't, you need to work on it. But if they're shifting you and all they're doing is pounding you in and soft stuff down and in, and your misses are ground balls, well, that's part of the game too. And good for them executing their pitches. But when they make the mistake, man, you got to take advantage of it. So the game is hard, and the defense is trying to take as many of their strengths away as possible.
You know, I love the way you addressed it. And, you know, for our younger coaches, and you said it, when you said, you know, I'd love for our hitters to be able to hit the ball where it's pitched, location, to that spot. You know, we also all know that it's not that it's easier said than done, and it takes years sometimes to develop that. That's why it's so important for our younger coaches at the younger levels to stress hitting the ball where it's pitched and hit it hard where it's pitched. So that way when they do get to you, or get to, you know, to the A ball or rookie ball, their higher levels, they already have a pretty good concept. As we all know, I mean, you could use, I'll use Sammy Sosa as an example. It took Sammy Sosa, he didn't do it in 1 year. It took him several years to understand how to hit the other way. And when he did, boy, he became a dominant force in hitting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. It takes time and takes an acceptance and awareness of who you are and what you're doing and where you can potentially get more hits. I think that, you know, people make decisions and start working on stuff when it's just very clear that an adjustment needs to be made. I don't think anyone's going out there and say, you know what, I am just going to hit into the shift and I'm just going to do it all the time. It's not how it goes. They are trying to, I hope they're trying to drive the ball to center field. They're trying to drive the ball over the shift, possibly. They are trying to do their thing. And if they see a ball away, they're trying to hit the ball the other way. But so much of it, you know, guys are throwing gas and they're also executing pitches. Now, when they don't execute pitches, I think you should be taking full advantage of the open fields. I think some elite players can really do it well. They can actually shift within the at bat what their intent is. And if you can manage your intent in your training and especially in your game, you can kind of get the feel that, you know, you can hit it wherever you want if you have the intent the way that you can do it. The whole key is, does your movement pattern allow for it? Does it allow for this, or does it only allow for one swing or a one-plane swing with very little adjustability to be able to go through and do it? Adjustability is the key, and just being athletic in the batter's box helps make you successful. So, Like I said, man, lots of layers to that onion right there, and it's one of those things that people can look at and be mad about. But don't be afraid to look at the guys that never get shifted. Those are the guys that hit the whole field.
Mm-hmm. I'll tell you what, Darren, this has been outstanding, and we went over our time. I really appreciate it, but I do want you to finish it off because I know I missed something. Something that you feel is important that the coaches and players and parents, you know, within the U.S. and around the world, that you just want to mention, that you want to say that's important for them to maybe teach or follow or whatever it is. It's your time, and then we'll finish it off from there.
Sure. I just really think that the game is so hard. There's a lot of negativity. I think the positivity that you bring and the energy you bring on a daily basis is something you can control as a coach all the time. And bringing it every day and bringing it for the players and bringing it for the understanding that you are there for them 100%. Ego is away. It's put away. You put the ego aside and you go out and you're trying to help players in any realm that you possibly can. And doing that in a positive way is huge. I think that, I'm continually trying to learn different things and find out a better way to do different things and going to coaches' clinics, speaking at clinics, and then speaking and then listening to all the other speakers that are there and trying to find one way to say something that's similar or maybe even exactly the same drill, but saying in a different way to help that one player that you haven't quite connected with. And I think that's huge. You know, getting on these podcasts, reading books, finding different ways of cross-training a little bit, getting into how the golf body moves and how training can help a player. Is he limited physically? Finding different things that you know, people say out of the box, I guess. But if you're actually just continually always looking for something new, it's not that far in the box. It's just who you are and what you do. Doing all that stuff with positivity and bringing it every single day. that's what players need at every level. And I think too many younger players get caught. The game catches up to them so fast, you know, from one level to the next. I'm talking youth baseball now, that they get to the point where I can go do something else that's way more fun and maybe easier. And the more positivity that you can create at all the levels as you go through, it's going to help keep the athletes in baseball and make our game continue to be great.
All right, great advice. Great way to end the show. That is Darren Everson, Colorado Rockies hitting coordinator. You can check him out on his website, elitebaseballacademy.com. He is all over the country doing things with players and coaches. So check out the website again. We'll have it on our show notes. That's elitebaseballacademy.com. Hey, but Darren, I want to thank you so much, my friend. That was outstanding. Love it. I know you're very busy when you're handling a whole, you know, system when it comes to hitting. That's an all-year-round work. So thanks for being on the show, man.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, and good luck to everybody out there.
All right. Again, that was Darren Everson, Colorado Rockies hitting coordinator. And we want to thank all our listeners for being on the show. I want to thank Brian Crock, our producer with the Lineup Media Group. Check them out. They've got a lot of great shows. Don't forget, the only thing we ask is go to iTunes and Stitcher, give us a rating. Hopefully it'll be a 5-star rating if you love the show. That rating helps us get the show out. That's how people find out about the show. And if you want, if you got extra time, we'd love it. Take, go to Baseball Out. That's our Twitter. Go to Baseball Outside the Box. That's our Facebook. And also the website, baseballoutsidethebox.com. Forward that to everybody you know that's in the game of baseball, whether it be coaches, players, or parents. Again, the more we get it out, the more information we get out there, that just helps the game. It helps, of course, our podcast. We're trying to, you know, grow it the best way we can. If you have any questions anytime, love to hear from you. PeterCaliendo@iCloud.com. Again, PeterCaliendo@iCloud.com. Send me your questions or comments, or if you want to hear a specific guest, I will email you right back right away. So again, I want to thank everybody for being and listening to the show. I'm your host, Pete Caliendo. This is Baseball Outside the Box. Have a great coaching day, and we'll see you on the next show.
This has been Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Listen online at baseballoutsidethebox.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm. This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.